Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Here we go. Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of another Dolphins podcast. Please help me welcome a very special guest, a three-time Super Bowl champion turn analyst. He can be heard on Fox Sports 104.3 The Fan in Denver, and host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast, Mark Schlereth. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk today. How are you?
I'm good, man. My pleasure. Good to be with you guys.
Hey, we hear you all throughout the football season. 17 games are trying to catch up with your sound bites, but there aren't any games going on. What's your off-season process like? Are you up to any fun projects, catching up with the draft?
Yeah, I'm trying to watch film on the draft a little bit. I'm always kind of just working on football stuff. You know, I tend to kind of peruse film, go back and look at things and see what teams are doing. I try to do a little bit of that, but here in Denver, I live in Denver, do a local radio show here in Denver. You know, we've really been kind of trying to parse out the quarterback situation, where they're going to go here in Denver with the draft and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of something I've been looking at, all these draftable quarterbacks and what I like, dislike, kind of just trying to parse that out and figure out what the Broncos might do.
Yeah, as Dolphin fans, we can completely relate to that endless spot. I mean, we're feeling pretty good now with Tua, but we were always, you know, scoping out the latest draft prospects at quarterback position. But speaking of the draft, we know the Dolphins have, you know, some work to do at the offensive line, most notably, you know, where you are most familiar with, the interior offensive line. So give me your thoughts on maybe some of these draft prospects and which you might think could come right in and fill in at guard or even maybe center for the Miami Dolphins this year and beyond.
Yeah, you know, the draft prospects, most of the tackles can really play. There's four or five tackles that I think are really good players. Most of them have the Polynesian names, so I can't pronounce them. And that's kind of how I always operate. It's funny, when I get ready to prepare to do a game, I'm always like, gosh, I hope that these three guys don't play this weekend. I just do not want this guy to make a play because I don't want to have to try to say his name. So, you know, that's always kind of an inside joke with us. But, yeah, you know what? It's funny because I've done so much work on the quarterbacks. I've done all the offensive tackles. I haven't really done the interior guys. But there are some guys that can really pay. And I think one of the things you have to understand is transitioning in offense, going from right side to left side, those are hard things to do. Going inside to outside, that's a really hard thing to do. But it's a much easier transition going from outside to inside. And there's a lot of guys who have done that. I remember Jonathan Ogden when he was a high first-round draft choice, starting and playing because Tony Jones was playing with Baltimore at the time, starting and playing his first season at guard and then moving out to tackle after that and becoming a Hall of Fame tackle. So those are things you can do if you find a guy that you think, gosh, I really like this guy. The other thing is, I'll be honest with you, playing guard easier than playing tackle. simply because you're playing more in a phone booth. You know, you got guys on all sides of you. And if you do your job well, and if you understand angles and you understand how to funnel guys and get them to go where you want them to go, you can usually use the body presence of another guy to kind of help you block that dude. So if you're smart, and most offensive linemen that coming in are pretty intelligent about the game, you can really have an advantage playing inside over being outside. So that's one of the things that, you know, that you can do from a transitional standpoint. If you want to take one of these guys, start them at guard for a while and then move them to tackle later, you can do that as well.
Just to build off that real quick, is there any issue with maybe pushing certain prospects towards a specific position? Not to be overly broad here, but you mentioned kind of maybe transitioning, starting at guard and moving back to tackle. Is that something you're kind of comfortable seeing with that development? Or would you maybe like to see if they kind of start out at guard, they're starting to learn things, would you rather them stick there?
No, it depends on, like, I want the best five guys to play.
Okay.
And if you have, you know, if you have an ability to be versatile and to do that, then, and that's the best spot for our team, then I think that's something that you know, you have to do. And that's something that's endemic of that position in general, is the guys that play in offensive line room. Those guys are in it for each other. They understand that for me to be really good, we all have to be really good. And there's a camaraderie in that room like none I've ever seen anywhere else. So you're not worried about, you know, how many balls one guy catches versus you, this, that, or the other. Like I always say, man, you know, when I was playing, we used to fight in our offensive line room. We would fight over responsibility for a bad play. Like, no, I'll take that. Give me the minus grade on that. No, you know, somebody else, your left tackle would step up and go, no, baloney. I'm taking that. No, the center would say, no, that's my job. I should have been there. So guys fight to take responsibility for bad grades, and it's just the way that room operates. And if you're not one of those guys, if you're not a team-first guy, you'll get ostracized, and basically guys won't talk to you. And that's been my experience throughout my, you know, 12-year career playing in that room.
Stink, after your playing career, you have transitioned in, and I loved hearing you on the call for Miami's game against Washington. They won it 45-15. And then I also listened to, I want to make sure I get the name right here, the Leftovers podcast you do with Mike Evans, a longtime sports reporter. Mm-hmm. And I was really inspired by some of the things you were saying about, you know, you had a conversation with Mike McDaniel, and then just how impressive Miami's performance was with speed, but they also showed a level of physicality. Can you kind of, does anything stick out, what, 5-6 months later about that? Those conversations and what you learned from Mike, or what you guys talked about?
Well, yeah, with Mike, it's cool because Mike was my ball boy when I played in Denver, you know, so it was cool to actually sit down with him. And the guy is, he's a brilliant football mind. And that whole group, whether it's Mike McDaniels or Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan, you know, LaFleur, all those guys that coached together at that time in Washington, they're fun to talk to because I think it's not only do they see, you know, the play and see the problem, but they see everybody's problems and they know how to attack problems. They also know that, hey man, if I get us into this, it's going to create a problem for us. You know, we're going to put a guy in a bad position. So really, they're really conscientious about trying to take, you know, trying to alleviate as many problems as possible. And if it creates, you know, if attacking a certain situation creates an untenable situation on your own team, then we just get away from it. We find something else that we can do. So I appreciate that kind of chess match and that understanding of the game and understanding other people's problems, because there's a lot of coaches that don't play that way. Mm-hmm. Just like, hey, we'll hold up here. And so I do appreciate the way they do that. It was fun to talk to Mike. He's an interesting dude. And I think he's a hell of a football coach. And I think that was one of the things about Miami that was so impressive. Now you lost, what's the kid's name? Christian Wilkins. That dude's a beast. He was a great player. So he ended up leaving, to the Raiders, and, you know, some Ogbaugh got released. I thought Ogbaugh was, you know, a good rotational player for them. Van Ginkel was really good. So you've lost some players, and that's always going to hurt. But ultimately, I thought as fast and as athletic as Miami is, they're a lot more physical, or they were a lot more physical on tape. It's almost one of those things that you don't think of them that way, and you see the highlights, and every highlight is, you know, Tyreek Hill just running by people, you know, or Waddle running by people. And so you don't really think of them as a team that can kind of get dirty. But I was impressed with the way they manhandled some people. Now, you know, some inconsistencies there as well. And obviously come playoff time, you got to find a way to get over the hump. But for the most part, watching them, I was really impressed with just how diverse they are and how they can beat you with speed, but how they can line up and play a little smash mouth with you as well.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, you're talking about how impressive Mike McDaniel's been, you know, from top to bottom. One of the things that he gets a lot of praise for is his development with quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. The Dolphins fan base, you know, they go back and forth on Tua Tagovailoa. Many of us support him, but there are some in the fan base that have their questions. So, you know, he's heading into year five. He's getting ready to get paid a monster contract inevitably. What are your thoughts on Tua Tagovailoa? And you talked a little bit about Mike McDaniel and the ball boy as a joke. Do you have any Mike McDaniel ball boy stories maybe to throw out there as well?
No, I wish I was paying more attention, you know. But he was really cool because as a ball boy, he used to say, you know, I used to just kind of be a fly on the wall and I'm cleaning stuff up and you guys are talking about whatever you're talking about. And I'm taking it all in. I'm taking notes. I'm taking down information. I'm like, oh, wow. If I ever get a chance to be a coach, you know, I'm going to know that this bothers my players or this is something I've got to look, you know. And so, you know, to have that kind of one, to have that desire to be a coach at that point in his life, and then to have the wherewithal to be, you know, picking tape up off the floor, doing whatever you're doing as a ball boy, and going taking mental notes about how guys react and what guys think and the way they approach certain things. I think it just goes to show you the depth of thought that he has. So that was kind of really cool. And I was really impressed with Tua. His ability to be a great anticipatory thrower, his ability to throw it into windows that aren't open yet, but are going to come open. Mm-hmm. I thought that's where he was exceptional. And just really good in those areas. You know, some of the pure dropback stuff I think needs to improve. But I love the quick game and I love some of the RPO stuff. And I love some of the, like I said, some of the anticipatory throws. I thought he was great. And you know, I was one of those guys that had my doubts early. And I thought he played really well last year. And speaking of you guys, one cool thing about your team, just sitting down with guys, he's a humble, really nice kid. Mm-hmm. And I felt the same way about Christian Wilkins talking to him and Waddle talking to him. I felt like your team was real connected. And I felt like the Dolphins had some, you know, people in leadership positions that were really, like, really solid dudes. And so, you know, culture is something you got to work on constantly. Culture is not static. It's alive. You constantly got to work on it. And I really felt like Tua and some of those guys were really, you know, had that part of the of football kind of nailed down.
You mentioned Mike McDaniel being a bit of a deep thinker. And I remember I was listening to an interview you did with Rich Eisen. I think it was 2022, right when McDaniel was hired. And you were kind of talking about the Shanahan run system and how they can do a lot of different things, mm-hmm. and how the communication still remains decently simplified for the offensive line, because no matter who's carrying the football, you mentioned that the blocking a lot of the time stays the same. Miami had one of the better rushing attacks in the league. They averaged 5.0 yards per carry. but they really fell apart near the end of the season. I remember watching Hard Knocks, and Mike McDaniel would call out plays saying, this is a silly play call. I can't believe I did this. And then he'd go ahead and call it again the next week. We got a really unique level of transparency with this team. And I wanted to get your thoughts. Do you think there's any scenario where, as a young coach, as a young play caller, McDaniel might get tripped up with overthinking once in a while, just based on, you know, he's always trying to find that next solution and maybe be three steps ahead when you only might need one?
Yeah, I think that that's – I mean, I think that's a problem throughout coaching is you're always trying to, you know, push the ball, advance kind of the thought, advance what you're doing. And I think there's a lot of guys that get caught up sometimes in that. And it's really interesting because for me, when I consult with teams about the running game, one of the things I always try to tell teams is you have to be able to hang your hat on something. Mm-hmm. There's got to be an identity. And every week can't be, in my opinion, every week can't be game plan run. Meaning, hey, they play this defense, and to this defense, we want to run, you know, pin pull stuff. Or to this defense, we really want to run our gap stuff. Or this defense, you know, we really want to run our duo concepts. Or this defense, we really want to run our zone concepts. I believe that a couple of things have to happen. I believe you have to have an identity, and you have to have some go-to plays where there's not a moment of doubt if you get what we call a bastard look, mm-hmm. something that they're lined up in that you can't quite identify, that you can't quite understand what it is. It's some crappy shades and some guys that are in the wrong position. Like when you game plan run things and you get a look like that, ultimately what happens to you is there's confusion. Mm-hmm. And when there's confusion, then there's a lack of aggressiveness. And so I'm a believer in saying, hey man, we got this group of, you know, four runs that we're going to run, and we're going to run on every game. Now we may window dress it and change the formation of the personnel group and motion and shift to it, but we're going to run this constantly. And then you have your game plan runs mixed in to that stuff. One of the things that drives me crazy about this new generation of coaches, and you hear it all the time, is we want to get to a premium play. And what that means is a lot of times, and McDaniels does this, and you know, everybody in that tree does it. They call them can it plays or can plays. So they'll call trips right, nasty H left outside, two jet branch buffalo or whatever. And they'll be like, now, if we get this look, we're in a can it, we want motion, and we're going to run 18 handoff strong. We're going to run 19 weak, whatever. And the problem with doing that is that you line up on the line of scrimmage and you sit on your haunches and you wait and you try to eyeball and figure out, and everybody knows why we check, right? It could be as simple as, hey man, if we get a bubbled guard on the strong side, we're checking the 18 handoff, mm-hmm. right? But on the left side, sometimes you don't know what you got on the right side. So it's hard to see through all those bodies and stuff, and you're in a stance, you know, and you're peeking out of the top of your helmet. And so what ends up inevitably happening, and I hate it, there is no premium play. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. So let me just line up and just absolutely try to shorten somebody's neck. So I know what we're like. And so sometimes in today's NFL, we get into what's the perfect play and the perfect play call and the perfect scenario. And I think too many coaches get involved in that. And it takes away, I understand the concept of it, but I think sometimes it takes away an offense's aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I always say when I'm trying to, you know, work with teams or talk to coaches, I always want to be able through play calling to take the passive out of pass protection. I don't care who you are. If you drop back 40 times a game, you're going to get your ass kicked. It's shit. It's impossible. It's a unique position playing on the offensive line because you're measured up against a dude that's the same height and weight as you, but is usually exponentially more gifted than you as an athlete. That's why he's on defense. And it's the only position in football, or it's the only position in sports, I don't care what sport you're talking about, where a lesser athlete is matched up against a better athlete. And the lesser athlete is expected to win 100% of the battles. And if he doesn't, he's a piece of crap, and the other guy goes to a Pro Bowl. You give up one sack, and you're a piece of garbage. And so it's a really unique – that's why I always say playing offensive line is the most skilled position in football, because every time you line up, you're overmatched by a better athlete. Mm-hmm. And so you're – from the skill standpoint, you better be impeccable with your footwork, with your timing, your hat placement, how you use your hands. All those things are imperative. And you better be smarter than everybody. Well, you are smarter because you're on offense. Those guys are on defense. They're dumb. So you are smarter than them, but you've got to use that every single play. I mean, let's face it. Come on. Like, we just watched one of the great careers I've ever seen in my entire life with Aaron Donald retiring. Mm-hmm. Like, that dude, and now he always, for the most part, got double teamed, but that dude was, it's unfair how athletic that dude was compared to the guys he played against. And, you know, he can wreck a game. So it just is a, it's just a very unique position. And I think some coaches, again, fail to understand how difficult it really is. And that's why they think, oh, I'll just get us into the perfect play. Then I don't have to worry about it. And I think that that whole perfect play scenario is, you know, bullshit. I just don't think it exists.
I want to get your thoughts. There's a lot of moving pieces right now in the AFC East. I mean, I don't need your prediction because we know, you know, things change at the drop of a hat. The draft's coming up. There's going to be players signed. But what are your thoughts right now in the AFC East? We know Stephon Diggs is gone. Do the Dolphins have a legit chance to compete? Should we be worried about the Jets? How are you feeling early on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Jets are interesting to me just because Aaron is legit. And, you know, if he's right, and I think he will be health-wise, I think the Jets have a chance. I mean, their defense, as you guys well know, their defense was legit. They're big time. And yeah, exactly. So they're really good. And then, you know, Aaron can take some of the pressure off the offensive line. You know, his quick game is exceptional. His ability to create and find the best matchup that he wants to exploit, and his ability to throw it to a guy who's completely covered and still come away with a completion, is as good as anybody in football. And his ability to move around and throw off platform accurately is probably one of the best I've ever seen. So he does that. I still think Miami's got a great chance in this division. The thing I always worry about Miami, and this is going to sound flippant, but it's not, is you play in Miami. And there's a lot of other distractions that you don't have when you play in Buffalo, or you don't have when you play in other places. And they're legit. They're legit. I'll never forget coming in the locker room. We played a Super Bowl where we were being hosted by Miami. We're in Miami for the Super Bowl 33. And so we're in the Dolphins facility, and we had one of our teammates roll in on a Wednesday after a Tuesday night off, and wrote on the big grease board sitting in the locker room, and Davey there, the 10 reasons the Miami Dolphins will never win the Super Bowl. And he wrote down 10 strip clubs that he'd been to that the night before. And he goes, dude, you can't focus on football here. He's like, and he was dead serious. And it was really funny, but you know, I look at that beautiful area. I always said the same thing when the Chargers were in San Diego. I mean, in November in Denver, it's drizzly and it's gray and the coaches are up your ass and, you know, and things aren't going well and it's miserable and, you know, and they let you know it. And then you leave the facility. And like I said, it's just ugly out and everything else. Right. In San Diego back in the day, it's ugly. Their coaches are up your ass. It's terrible. But you walk out and you're in San Diego. You go, hey, let's go have a drink in La Jolla, you know. I mean, it's like, I don't know that the same kind of intensity sometimes happens in those places. We shall see. But yeah, it would be, I think, a tough place for a lot of guys to have great focus.
Tunnel vision is so important. Stink, I have one final question for you, and please jump on me if I say anything wrong here. I think I was reading that you've had throughout your career 29 surgeries, including 20 knee surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if you could talk maybe a little about breaking news, the hardships of playing in football. I think we've over time kind of gotten used to looking at injury reports and just questionable, probable, good to go. And if someone's not on the injury report, they're entirely healthy. I look at someone like Teron Armstead, where he tries so hard every week to gear himself out. And when he's on the field, he's an absolute stud. So I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts as that offensive lineman who's had to just work and rebuild so many times. What's that like?
You know, there's a badge of honor to playing hurt. I've always said, you know, people say, well, you got to play hurt, but you can't play injured. And that's bullshit. You got to play injured and you got to play well injured and you got to play well hurt. And if you don't last very long. And, you know, every guy is hurt and every guy's got injuries and every guy that plays that lines up every weekend's got something that's bothering him. But like I said, I always took it as a badge of honor that, you know, I was joking around, anybody could play when they feel good. That I could go out and play at a high level and perform at a high level. Even when, you know, I didn't feel very good, even though I was, you know, I mean, just for you guys, I mean, there were so many times that I tore knee cartilage, in week one and played into the bye week until week six, you know, and played the whole time, had a knee surgery, an elbow surgery on a Monday after a game and played on Sunday. Had a kidney surgery on a Sunday night at about 11 o'clock at night and played the Raiders Monday night the very next day. Checked myself out of the hospital and drove to play, you know, drove down to the stadium and played.
Someone didn't even drive you?
No. So, like, there's all – but it's what you do as a player, and it's, you know, and like I said, it's kind of a badge of honor. So it was important to me, and you know, playing for the guy beside you, as cliche as that is, that was really important to me. And it wasn't only the guy beside me. It was the equipment managers. It was the trainers. It was the guys – that's those are the guys I hung out with. You know, those are the guys that I was best buddies with. So – those guys were important to me. The facility was important to me. The team was important to me. All that stuff was important. And so, I just felt like it was my responsibility to play and try to line up every week and play. And, I did that for the most part to the best of my ability. I missed a few games here and there, but for the most part, I played when I clearly shouldn't have played. But, you know, it's still what pushes me right now from working out and doing all the stuff that I do. I do things that the average human couldn't do, and I torture myself all the time because I feel like you've got to stay active and not fall victim to, you know, whether it's head trauma and all that, you know, physical. The more sedentary you are, the more sedentary you become, both physically and mentally. Mm-hmm. And so I push myself like a maniac all the time, and I love it. So, like I said, man, I did what I did in the gym today would kill the average man. So, and that to me is fun.
Mark, I think I speak for Jake and myself when I say this is absolutely phenomenal to have you on this podcast. Before we let you go, tell our listeners, you know, maybe some of the projects you're working on this offseason, where they can follow you and find you each and every day, because you're all over the place right now.
Well, I talk a lot of smack on X or Twitter, formerly known as Twitter, I guess is it. So, I treat that like a locker room. So if you've got sensitive feelings, don't get at me, because I will come back over the top. You don't live and grow up in a locker room like I did and not have some shit talking ability. So if you come at me, just understand you're fair game, because that's how I operate. And people say, well, no, it's a public forum, so it's not like a locker room. If you come into my house and talk shit to me, then you and I are going to go at it, right? That's just the way it works. So you can find me there, Instagram. I'm all over the place. YouTube, the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Mm-hmm. We do that a couple days a week, and that has really caught on here lately. So that's been fun. Anywhere you download, podcasts, Apple, Odyssey, whatever it is, the Stinkin' Truth podcast as well. There you can find me. So those are the kind of things I'm doing in the off season right now.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Stink. It was an absolute blast.
Yeah, my pleasure. You guys take care. Have a good one.
Take care.
You too.
Now.